Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
On behalf of NACSW, I'm delighted to welcome you today to the audio conference webinar entitled Learning Through Technology, an Engaging, Practical, and User-Friendly Approach, presented by Drs. David Cecil, Chair of the Behavioral Sciences Department and Professor of Social Work at Asbury University in Wilmore, Kentucky, and Stephen Baldridge, Director of the Undergraduate Social Work Program at Abilene Christian University in Abilene, Texas. Online education, mobile education, and the use of technology in general can be intimidating and expensive. Is it possible to find approachable and cost-effective ways to use these tools to reach today's social workers and students? This interactive workshop presents an evidence-based, motivating approach to engage in the valuable tools of online and mobile education. It simultaneously attends to the issue of motivation, that is, willingness and self-efficacy, as well as training technology. This webinar describes ways to utilize technology that people are already using, as well as pushing into new and effective tools people will learn to use and retain at higher levels as they go along. Just before we begin our session, let me quickly cover a few important housekeeping items. First of all, for most of today's session, we'll be using a muting function to eliminate all background noise that might compete with David's and Stephen's presentation. We're actually in that muting function operative right now. However, at different intervals, we'll invite participants to raise questions and make comments. During these intervals, if you want to be heard, simply enter *6 on your phone keypad, and you'll be heard by the entire group. Then after you're done, we ask that you enter *6 on your keypad to remute yourself, again, so that there won't be competing voices going on at once. We recommend you remain muted anytime you're not speaking to reduce the amount of background noise and feedback. And again, this is a feature that will open up your ability to unmute yourself at different times during the presentation when David and Stephen gives the word. Secondly, just a reminder that today's call will be recorded for folks who cannot participate but were interested in today's material. And then thirdly, if you wish to be able to see the presenters online and follow their PowerPoint outline during this session, and you're not yet logged on to the webinar feature of this session, all you need to do is send an email to info@nacsw.org, and we'll send you URL to be able to participate in the webinar feature. Or if you just want a copy of the PowerPoint, send an email to info@nacsw.org, and we'll send you a copy as an email attachment within the next few minutes. So now, without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speakers, David and Stephen.
All right, very good. Can you hear me, Rick?
Loud and clearly.
All right, perfect. My name is Stephen Baldridge. I am, like Rick said, I am the director of the bachelor program at Abilene Christian University. Just real quick to kind of tell you about my background in technology and why perhaps that I am here today. My area of practice is school social work, childhood behavior, parenting, along those things. And I've always been kind of a techno geek. My dad's a techno geek, and so I was born into it naturally. But basically, when I got into higher education, I really started looking into researching the ways that technology can be leveraged to help learning, student learning, things like that. And so primarily my frame of reference is education in the classroom, but a big part of that is teaching students technology in practice as well. And so while I am currently using a lot of technology in the classroom, I am pretty well versed on kind of all areas of technology, specifically social media. That's my area of research. That's my area of, I guess if you wanted to say expertise. So I'm going to talk a lot about that today. And then you can see my Twitter handle right there, SocialWorkSteveO. We're going to talk about that in a second if anyone's interested in that. But before we move on, I'm going to let Dave introduce himself.
Thank you, Stephen. I hope everybody can hear me okay here. I think technology is obviously just one of those things, and it's such a broad term. There are so many different directions to go with the training like this. I think it's fair to say that Stephen and I are both education focused. We're both, you know, on campuses, and a lot of probably the majority of the technology that we use is in the area of creating educational opportunities. Stephen is very, very advanced in the, especially when it comes to bringing in social media in such an innovative way and just really using it for communication. I guess what I would say is for me, where I've used technology the most is in developing, at Asbury University, I think like most higher ed institutions across the country is talking a lot about moving to more and more online, either online courses or a lot of web-based courses. What I've found is that when I develop lectures or any kind of training materials online, that those become very, very useful tools for learning reinforcement. So in other words, if a student comes to me, it happened just now. A student came to me asking me about how to run a histogram when we'd gone over that a couple of weeks ago, and I just could remind him that there's a YouTube on our Discovery site that he could go and watch that. And but then, you know, I'm happy to sit down with him also. But it's just great to have. I just found that having this kind of technology available is so useful. But I also am in private practice, and I feel like, you know, technology, in so many ways it can be your best friend, and in other times it can absolutely just let you down in some very critical moments. But I think that I've also become very interested in using technology for time management, for organization, and just to kind of improve my overall ability. I think probably what's a common denominator for practitioners and for educators is that most of us probably feel like we have one or two or maybe a dozen too many irons in the fire. And I just can't imagine doing all of the things that I do today in my career, both as an educator, a researcher, and as a practitioner, without having the technology that I have for scheduling, for structuring, for problem solving, and so I sort of enjoy and look for ways to bring technology pretty much into everything that I do. So that's a little bit on my background.
All right, very good. We're going to practice what we preach today. We'll see how this works. It might be great. It might have not a lot of interaction, but that's fine too. The hashtag, we're going to talk a lot about Twitter and hashtagging in a little bit, but the hashtag we're going to use today is NACSWTech. So if you have anything you want to say, anything you want to save, reiterate, anything you want to share with the group, feel free to put that on Twitter and be sure and hashtag it with NACSWTech. As I can, I'll be live tweeting through the day, and if we have kind of a critical mass, some good stuff at the end, I will archive that and make that available. But we'll see how it goes. I've tweeted twice already this morning, so or this afternoon, depending on where you are, and we'll just kind of see how it goes from there. But we are going to practice what we preach today. Dave, you want to go over the focus of the workshop real fast?
Yeah, when Stephen and I presented this at the NACSW conference in Atlanta last year, we definitely approached it from more of an education-oriented perspective. And what's been important to me is when we talk about technology diffusion, we're not really just talking about, you know, whether we use technology or not, or how this works or how that works. I think there are many motivation issues related to technology, and I don't think it would be a surprise to anybody to know that in social work, obviously we have great diversity in our profession and in our discipline. That's no different when it comes to the academic world. But what I have seen is wide ranging reactions and responses to technology and to innovation, and a lot of people have really opted out of the whole, you know, quote unquote movement of technology just because they feel that it's been way too aggressive, it's been way too pervasive and sweeping, and that we haven't thought enough about what's the real value of using technology. And so when Stephen and I have talked about this, we tended to talk also a lot about things like motivational issues, motivational. And I think by now most people in our field are familiar with motivational interviewing and the trans-theoretical approach, and it talks about the stages of change. I think it's important that when people are thinking about technology, they sort of consider themselves in these stages. Like, where are you? You know, what? How do you think of yourself and your general attitude and demeanor related to technology? And there could be some aspects of it that you've been very open to. There could be some aspects of it where you feel like you'll never do it. And then there may be other areas in between where if you knew a little bit more, or if you had the right kind of, training and encouragement and opportunity, that you would get into that. What I've seen in two universities that I've worked in where I've seen a lot of technology being used are some very different messages coming from the people who are trying to push technology. So if you have an information technology department at your agency or at your institution, I think what I've noticed a lot of times is the way that they talk about technology, they do it in a way that's very unmotivating. And usually the way that looks is they either make it so technical and or they make it very authoritative, like you have to do this, you're going to have to make online classes whether you like it or not, or you're going to have to use the technology whether you like it or not. It's here whether you like it or not. I feel like for most people when they get a message like that, they're more likely to stay in those earlier stages of change or just completely opt out of using technology. And so as we talk about technology, I think, Stephen and I would agree that we don't just expect and assume that everybody is in the same place with their motivation level, with their preference for technology, or their willingness. And so we should be open about those more intrinsic / even, clinical kinds of issues related to, where you are and where you're going with technology.
Yep. So, real fast, before I'm going to flip back a couple slides, before we get going too much, those of you who are actually on the computer and looking at this presentation, what's your primary interest in social work technology? I'm going to pull up a poll real fast, and we're just kind of get a feel of who's here, just because David and I can kind of speak specifically to what you guys want to hear and what are you interested in. And so I just pulled a poll up there. What's the main interest you're attending today? Classroom technology, technology and ethics, personal use, professional use, or you have no idea. That's okay. And then while you're voting on that, over on the left-hand side in the chat box, we've kind of told you who we are. A lot of times webinars don't really let you tell who you are, but feel free to put that over there in the chat box. What areas of social work you're currently involved in, and let us know who you are. Just over there so we can kind of get a feel for this. So it looks like basically what we're interested in, one person has no idea, which is completely fair, and I'm really glad that you're here. Five people are in it for professional use, and then one person is interested in classroom technology. And then personal use as well. So we'll definitely speak to a little bit of all those. And I think there is, and a lot of people get kind of nervous when I talk about this, but there is some overlap between personal use and professional use. And I think that's interesting to talk about. Especially when you talk about ethics, but also when you talk about a learning network and a professional network and things like that. So the implications of digital literacy, and I think this is an important one that makes some people uncomfortable, the ethical implications of digital literacy. There was some really good conversation that at CSWE APM a few weeks ago and then at the ANCSW conference last week, there's some really interesting things about social work and ethics, whether or not if you do decide that, no, I'm not going to be involved in the technology movement, I'm going to shun it as much as possible, are there ethical implications there? Is that an issue of competence? In the Code of Ethics, it's pretty clear about we're to be competent social workers, and especially if we're involved in things like school social work or education of any type, are those things that we need to be concerned about? If we are not competent in just some basic levels of technology and social media, those things that our clients are competent in or that are more than competent in, that are well-versed, does that make us incompetent or irrelevant to them? And I do think that there are some healthy discussions that need to be had about that. Dave, do you have anything else to say about digital literacy or anything to chime in on an ethical implication?
No, I think you covered that well.
Good. So So if you want to, you can feel free to, I'm trying to think if we should take questions now, if you want to just keep going here. Let's just keep going into the middle, and if you have a question or anything, just write it out to the left, and we'll address that. So further considerations, practical and user-friendly. You know, what we're going to talk about today is how to create a flexible and individualized plan, because technology is not a one-size-fits-all thing. You know, I prefer Twitter over Facebook. You might prefer Facebook over Twitter. You might prefer nothing over those, and that's okay too. But you know, it also depends on the purpose that you want to serve and your personality and what you want to do. And then we have to look at what are the most important elements of interaction, professionalism, teaching, practice. What are the most important things there, and how can you best emulate these in an online environment? You know, a lot of times people just think about, and we will, I think Dave's going to talk about that in a minute, but when you think about social work and practice and technology, you think of, well, online therapy. What are the implications to that? Well, it's much more than that. If you love professional development, you know, anything from professional development to staff meetings, what are things you can do to enhance those with technology? So we'll talk about that some too. Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
I just totally agree with that. I mean, I think that what you would want to do is you know, have a type of, and I'm trying to remember if we had an instrument that we used when we presented this, you know, last year, that really asked people about what are the specific areas that you feel really comfortable and confident in with technology. Where are the areas that you, if you just had the time, what areas would you want to grow in, and how would you do that? And, you know, I think that making short strides is a very good way to kind of learn and grow, whereas I think a lot of people feel, I don't know if people in our field will tend to get the way that technology that will sometimes be about statistics and research, where you just feel like it's too complicated, it's too technical, and therefore you just kind of think, I'll never get it. Even if I tried it, maybe I would never get it. There's sort of that intimidation factor there. And I just don't think that that's ever a helpful thing to have going on. And so if there are ways to be more proactive and really kind of embrace it as your own sort of growth process, and it's okay if you don't understand all of the ins and outs. And when people are talking about Twitter and they're talking about all these different new social media outlets and things like that, you know, you find the things that are important to you and you grow in those ways. I think we would say that same thing to our clients and to our students, you know, sort of figure out where you are with it and then learn how to grow from there.
Sure. Great.
So, the next portion, and this was something, again, most of this PowerPoint is really geared towards educators and researchers, and we're seeing from this poll here that we have a much larger preference on using technology for professional development, and I still think that we need to spend some time even getting into the other material that we have prepared, for this presentation, but I'm happy to kind of get into this. Now, I put up a couple of areas of technology use, and I'm just wondering if you all want to keep on giving us some feedback in the chat portion here. Let us know, do these seem like important areas for you? I put down fillable forms, as in the development of fillable forms. Is that something that people are doing? Is that something people feel like they would like to learn more about? Web-based documentation, and so this would have to do with using some of the things like Therapist Helper and some of those different areas. I, just in the last couple of years, finally got into the insurance game with my practice. I was trying to avoid it for years and years and years, but finally went through with it. Honestly, I'm still really ambivalent myself about that whole thing because it's an incredible amount of work. But you have to be pretty tech savvy when it comes to things like the doing the CAQH and getting involved in the clearinghouses for your practice, and knowing how and where to go get all of the stuff like the tax ID your national provider number, all of these different things. And then just calendars. I think just having items that you can, add their different apps and different programs out there. I think a lot of people don't realize the kind of time management tools and things that are out there for them. So I'm throwing those out there, kind of a menu of options. Are there any particular areas on that slide that people feel that they would like to learn about? One other area I didn't mention is probably most of you are aware the DSM-5 came out about a year and a half ago. That website is fully loaded and has all of the assessment measures. Well, I say all of them. I think nearly all of the assessment measures that you have to use. And so there's a source for technology use right there that I think has been a really, really big and, in my opinion, a very promising change. I'm just waiting for feedback here.
Feel free to chime in if you want to unmute yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, yeah, feel free to talk to us.
Are muted.
All right, Dave, can you explain some of those acronyms real fast for those people who might not be aware, like me?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. The CAQH is the Universal Provider Data Source. It stands for, this is a number, the Council for Affordable Quality Healthcare. For people who've gone into private practice and are looking to get on different insurance panels, it's such a convoluted and difficult process. The idea of a CAQH number, of having a CAQH number, is that you go into a universal provider data source, you fill out an application, and I'll see if I can share this on the desktop here.
Are muted and may unmute themselves by pressing *6.
This is a basically every time you fill out an application to go on a health insurance panel, it's a 20, 30 page document providing all the supporting document with it and your credentials, your license, your diploma. And it's just a very long, tedious, difficult process. So the idea of the CAQH, having a CAQH number, is that you do that one time, and then all of these insurance providers out there trust that source. And when you go to fill out the application, it's like you get to a certain point where it says you either fill all of this documentation out or give your CAQH number, in which case you can skip to, number 100 here and skip over this whole part of this process. So that is, let me see if sharing my desktop is going to work here, Stephen. Hopefully I don't lose anybody.
David, while you're doing that, I'll just make a quick commercial. We just heard from one of the participants who noticed the difference between the PowerPoint that we made available online and the one that you're using. And I assume that's reflective of some changes that you've made since you gave us one originally. So is it okay if we tell that if they want a copy of the most up-to-date one, they can email you afterwards for a copy of that?
Sure, that's fine. Rick, do you want me to send it to you right now while we're doing this?
Perfect, and then I'll attach it to a follow-up email I send to everybody.
Okay. Sorry about that, everyone.
And it should be only these two slides, the one that had the practitioner technology on there, and then the next slide, which is just a picture of the of one of the websites that I was going to reference. And so is everybody seeing my screen right now? Does everybody see the CAQH website?
Yes, that is coming in.
Okay. So this is where you go in for that enrollment, and you know there's and again this is a long, difficult process itself. But the idea is once you get through it, then you've got the number, and then you are you're ready to go, and you're able to use that. So that's CAQH, and then the EIN is just your tax number. It's a tax ID number. That's different from your social security number, and it's just for tax purposes. You get it through the IRS and employer identification number, okay? And then the NPI is the National Provider Identifier, and let me pull that up really quickly. And this is just a way to get on that registry. And anyway, the kind of the neat thing with technology now is, you know, you can go in and sign up for a lot of these things like your EIN and your NPI. You'll sign up for those things and get them within a day or two, and you're ready to go. And you kind of have to have all those things together. And I'm guessing that 20 years ago or 15 or even 10 years ago, it would have taken weeks and weeks and weeks to get to pull this information together. And so those are the acronyms that are on here for now. I don't know how useful it would be for folks to get more information about, because this is more like private practice oriented. Is that something that that people are wanting to hear more about? You want to relaunch the PowerPoint?
Yep. All right. Let's keep moving on, and then if we have questions in a bit, we can come back to this.
Yeah. Let me just say quickly, if people want to keep chiming in, if you would like to explore the DSM-5 website, we can do that. If people want to see this fillable form and see some of the bells and whistles about setting up the fillable forms, I like that for my own, doing my own assessments and documentation. I'd rather do that than to put my information into a web-based source. It's cheaper, and it's, you know, tailored just to my own specifications, and then I can use that data. You know, digital instead of me handwriting it. So if I ever needed to put it into a clearinghouse or into some other, other kind of web source, then it's there for copying, a quick copy and paste. So let me throw that option out there as well. And then time management. So if people want to give a little bit of feedback to me about any of those areas, I'm not going to take time to go through all of them just in case it's not something that's on people's radar. So feel free to proceed. You mentioned the online therapy thing, Stephen, and this is something that I have to say that I haven't looked into a whole lot myself. I'm aware of the coaching thing that's happening. I don't mean to be promoting these practitioners here today, but this was an example of, you know, what we're seeing more of. You can see there's a clinical social worker here. This is, in Louisville, Kentucky. But online therapy is here. I don't know how people feel about that. I don't have a whole lot more to say about it, but I think that that's going to be an area that a lot of us will want to explore and really, consider the good and the bad and the advantages and disadvantages of this movement. But it's a real deal that's happening with, you know, qualified professionals now.
David, since it sounds like you're looking for feedback, do you want to just open up the lines for questions or for folks to give you particular areas that they're interested in pursuing at this point?
Sure.
So if anyone wants to raise any questions or give David and Stephen feedback about some particular areas of interest, all you have to do is hit *6 on your telephone keypad and you'll be able to be heard by them. Or alternately, you can also type in your questions in the chat feature of the webinar session. But if you want to speak them through the phone, again, hit 5 on your keypad, and we'll be able to hear you at this point.
Right. And after this, I'm going to go into social media a little bit. Even for those people who know about social media, we might get into some stuff that you're not familiar with. And so I guess if we don't have any feedback or anything, we can just keep trucking along.
Yeah. Looks like there's been a couple responses now in the in the chat feature.
I'm seeing two things that I think I can look at pretty efficiently here, Steve, and then we can move on to social media. One is from Sarah asking about technology to provide training to social workers, and that could tie in a little bit with what we have here. And the DSM-5 website, okay to take 4 or 5 minutes here, Stephen, and then give you the rest for social media. Okay. For training materials, I really love doing some screen capture and using software like Camtasia here. Now, I am kind of promoting Camtasia. I don't get any money from them, but I think this has been, in my view, it's the most user-friendly screen capture software out there. And if you're familiar with like iMovie on the MacBooks or Windows Movie Maker, I think, on the PC, those are good and people use those all the time. But when it comes to instructional technology, having a program like a Camtasia that sort of anticipates that you're going to be wanting to blend in both images of you narrating along with your presentations and things, that can be a very, very, this is very good user-friendly software. And I think these days you can get Camtasia for between $100 and $200 depending on whether you have a PC or a Mac. They're a little more expensive on the Macs, but I think I noticed last year that the price actually came down on those. You all can click on any of these links, and you can see the different kinds of videos that I've created using Camtasia. Now, a lot of what I do, most of what I do is create lectures. You know, it's my image the way you're probably seeing it on this page next to a PowerPoint. So this is pretty much what it looks like, but you record it, and then you can give those out. And I've got these for all the DSM disorders. I've got these across, you know, my research courses, all of that. But I've also developed some, training videos. I don't know how good they are, you know. I mean, I do the best that I can with them. But, like, sometimes when I'm wanting to show a particular type of therapy model and maybe there's not a good video out there, then I'll bring somebody in and just do a mock interview, not with a real client. I usually don't go through all the confidentiality issues there. And I'll just record, you know, kind of what I'm looking for. And if I make mistakes, sometimes those mistakes can be just as much of a learning opportunity as the things that I'm doing that maybe look okay. So I think for training purposes, we used to all sit back and wait for these DVDs to come out. And I don't know about you all, but when I've looked at DVD or video materials from people like Albert Ellis and Carl Rogers and others, like, I love their writing, but those videos are not always really doing what I'm looking for, you know. And some of them may have been better authors than practitioners. And so I love having technology like this to develop materials that are. They're pretty easy. They're pretty, user-friendly to make them, and they can be very, very helpful. And so the videotaping, when it comes to developing practice skills, I think is, that's one of the best and easiest ways to grow in your interviewing skills is just seeing yourself on film. And that is, again, so much easier now using a program like this and then sharing that with other people. And then I think a lot of programs and agencies also use technology like this to develop orientation training. And so if you find that, you're hiring people many times and having to go in and give the same spiel, 5 or 10 times per year, go ahead and record that one good time, and then you have it, and And you can make it for free in your own office and have it do exactly what you want it to do. And so that's just a very very good thing to do. And so I've given you five links to check out some variations. One thing I'll point out is with our faculty here, we have a new way of reporting some of our data. And instead of trying to go into one meeting and share with them one time how to do it, I just created a YouTube, and I said, here, you've got it, and you can pause and rewind and look at it as much as you want. And then I will quickly say it's a fairly quick upload from Camtasia into, if you develop a YouTube account. Now, if you just send it straight to YouTube, it will limit you to 10 minutes or so. But if you will go in and create a YouTube account, then you can upload videos. I've got probably 50 videos in there, and they are all like about an hour long, or a lot of them are. And so there's no limit when you do it that way. Also, when you upload them unlisted unless you want them to be public. None of mine are public. You have to have the link like I provided here to be able to see those. You can also make them private, in which case you give people a username and password. I just found that that's very problematic to do that. People will use the username and password, and it still won't work. So the unlisted route seems to be the way to go, and people can't access that video unless they have the exact link for that. And so so I think that those are just some of your really some very useful, user-friendly, again, you know, Stephen and I, when we talked about technology use, we both have agreed that it's got to be, it has to be really good technology, and then it also has to be user-friendly. So if it's shutting down all the time, if it's, you know, problematic, would you agree with that, Stephen? You want to put in some comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The things that we're going to talk about today, by and large, are very stable. They're, I mean, anything that's related with Google, whether you like Google or not, anything that's related with Google is going to be incredibly stable just because Google owns the world and they're not going to let the products fail like that. So anything like YouTube, Google, Camtasia is, I mean, the problem with, and I like talking about free stuff a lot, but what my plug will always be is if you're using something free, whether that's an app or a software or anything like that, you are not the customer of that. You are the product of that. There's a reason that Twitter is free. There's a reason that Facebook is free. It's because of all the ads. People are paying thousands of dollars to advertise to you. You are the product, the customer of Twitter, and the customer, the advertiser, the advertisements. But saying that, Camtasia, outside of just using it in the classroom, I have extremely useful ways to utilize Camtasia in school social work. Some of the things that I've been doing, I still do a lot of consultation with classroom teachers, K-12, and what I'll tell them to do is if you're working with kids, let's say kids with Asperger's syndrome, or kids on the autism spectrum, a lot of the things that we know about those kiddos is they have a lot of social deficits. And so research says if you can show video modeling of social stories, that that's really useful. Well, even 10, 15 years ago, you know, you got to haul out a video recorder, you have to videotape those kids, and you have to plug that tape into the VCR. And if you've only got 30 minutes to work with a kid each day, that's not feasible. Well, we don't have to do that right now because most of us have a video camera right here. And so if I want, you know, little Johnny to practice appropriate greetings, I will record him doing appropriate greetings, you know, throughout the day or with me. And then what I can do is I can mash those all up together in Camtasia, and it takes about 10 minutes, and I can make a little 5-minute social story for that student, and I can say, here, let's watch this, and I can talk over that. Basically, I can't provide a link to that in here because of confidentiality. But if you want to look in the chat feature over there, I put a Camtasia tutorial. It is really a simple software to use. And if you can just upload your videos from your iPhone, your Android phone, or whatever to there, you can plug those in, and you can make a video for a kid in about 15 minutes. And they could have that to look. And that's evidence-based because kids could be able to look at themselves and mimic those behaviors. And so anything along those lines, Camtasia is good for. I know $100 can be a lot, but if you're going to spend $100, Camtasia is a really useful way to spend it.
Yeah, great. It's a great point. And for the products that you create, you know, 15 years ago, if you paid someone to come in and develop materials like that, it would cost you hundreds of dollars every time they did that. And so to have technology at your fingertips, and once you learn how to do it, it's like baking a cake, I would think. I don't really do much baking, but I can, you know, once you've done it a few times and you've got a good result and a good outcome, you just get kind of automatic with it. And it's just like that. And the other thing I was going to mention that reminded me that for a lot of people and programs and agencies and practices, if they're going to develop something like this, where would they put it? How would people access those things? And that just reminded me, you know, the websites now, and I've developed one for my own private practice, and then I serve on the board for the Kentucky Society for Clinical Social Work, and we've just developed a new website. The website platforms now, and Weebly is one of them. I found this to be one of the most user-friendly, and there's a free version of Weebly. This is one example where there's actually something free that's worth having. If you are limited to just needing a few pages of a website, this can be a great platform to set up for your program, your agency, or your private practice. And then you can very easily embed videos like and there's Squarespace, Weebly, there are numerous others. Again, I don't know if I'm supposed to be promoting specific products. While I'm at it, I'll just say I'm drinking a Coke Zero. That I enjoy. No, I don't know if I'm supposed to be better or not, but this particular website I found, a web provider, has been very, very user-friendly for me. Now, Steve, I'll do this, and then I'll shut up for a little while, but somebody else asked about the DSM-5 online resources. I do all kinds of trainings on the DSM-5, and one thing I've just told, you know, by now, I don't know, thousands of people, is don't think of the new DSM-5 as just a book. It's a book and it's a website. There is a ton of information on the website about the research behind the DSM-5, the decisions that were made. But I think by far the most useful aspect of the DSM-5 website is if you scroll down to the right navigation and go to online assessment measures. I don't know if folks are aware that there's no longer a multi-axial assessment system. We no longer have the GAP instrument, but we have all of these new instruments available to us. Level 1 and Level 2 cross-cutting symptom severity measures, those are really the ones that took over for the GAP. This is not the instrument. This is a list of the areas where there are instruments. Here are all of the instruments that are now available on the DSM-5 website. And, you know, once upon a time, we took the DSM out, and then we made a copy on a copy machine, and it would be tilted slightly to the left, and every time somebody made more copies of that, it would get more and more tilted and less clear. Now what you can do is you can go onto these websites, and it's free. You don't have to even buy the book to get these sources. Thus far, it's open to the public, and you can go in and download these instruments like the WHODOS. You might say this is a partial replacement of the GAP instrument. This is the World Health Organization Disability Assessment Survey. But as you can see from here, you can get a nice, clean copy. You can't fill it out online. You'll be able to get a nice, good, clean printout and copy that and use it that way. So that is a very, very helpful web-based resource for the practitioner. I'd also point out to folks that I think that APA is kind of going the way of technology themselves. We no longer use the Roman numerals. They're using the Arabic numerals now because presumably they're looking at the DSM publications as in a very similar way to operating systems. So the next one will be 5.1. or 5.1.2, you know, and it will sort of go the way of these operating systems and how we use numbers to represent. Like in the Apple iPhone, we're up to the operating system, you know, I forget, 8 point whatever. And so I think it's interesting to note that that the DSM-5 is now the Arabic numeral and not the Roman numeral. So, all right, that's enough for me for a while. Thank you.
Sure. Real fast. There's a few things that I'll just touch on, and then I'll talk a little bit about social media. I'm sorry, I cannot multitask. Let me pull up the PowerPoint. Okay. All right, file sharing. A lot of people probably already know about this, but the best file sharing website that I use and that Dave and I have actually used in preparing for things like this is Dropbox. That's dropbox.com. Basically, it's free if you want to use up to, I think it's what, 4 gigs. But then it's $100 a year if you, and it gives you a ton of space, for that, like a terabyte or something like that. So you can store your whole computer on there if you want to. But basically what websites like Box and Dropbox are is it's just a way if I have a PowerPoint I'm working on, I can share that with multiple people without having to email that to them. And you can share any kind of files, pictures. It's like your phone. Like I have a Dropbox account on my phone with my dad, and so if I take pictures of the grandkids, I don't have to text all those to him. I can just automatically upload those into Dropbox, and they'll automatically be on his phone and computer. And there's some very rigorous storage method or sharing methods and settings and things like that. So, Poll Everywhere at Google Drive. Poll Everywhere, if you are a teacher, is very useful. It's a way to instantly poll your class in that. Just go to polleverywhere.com. Google Drive is something else. It's what's called. It used to be called Google Docs. Now it's kind of going back to Google Docs. Anyway, if you type in either Google Drive or Google Docs into Google, you will get there. But it's a way to share documents. Like you can get on a computer. Let's say Dave's in, at Asbury University. I'm in Abilene, a long way away. We can pull up Google Docs, and we can both work on the same document in real time, like a Word document. We can both type in there at the same time. So that's something that's really useful for collaboration. All right, social media. Let's talk a minute about social media. A lot of people kind of turn up their nose at social media a lot, especially in social work. I've heard all of the criticisms about it. You know, it's taking away from all of our meaningful interactions. It's causing us to not want to leave the house. I will say there is no evidence to support any of those assumptions. For instance, I don't ever say, well, I'm not going to go have dinner with my friends because I'm just going to talk to them on Facebook. But we're not necessarily going to get into that today, but I do advocate for the use of social media, especially professionally. Not necessarily in practice, but for you as a professional, I think it has some useful implications. So let's talk about these real fast. I'm going to talk about Twitter specifically in depth in just a second. Instagram is basically a place where you can share photos with either public or with just people that are in your fringe network. So it's a photo-based social media website. Facebook, most people I think know what Facebook is. It's just a community where you can gather with people that are your friends and share videos and files and debate politically and religiously and all those things that I can't understand why people do a lot of the times, but they do. So there's that. We're not going to talk specifically about Facebook. I think Facebook has a lot of really useful functions in an educational setting, but since we're not really talking about an educational setting today, I think Facebook creates a lot of ethical issues in practice. And so we're not really going to talk about Facebook a lot in practice. What we are going to talk about specifically are Google Plus and Twitter. Real fast at the bottom of the screen, Pinterest is a virtual pin board. Again, a lot of really useful things you can use in education and professionally too, but just we don't have a lot of time today, so we're going to talk mainly about Twitter and Google Plus. Hierarchy of social media, but a lot of people think social media is just for content delivery. I would argue that if you are using social media to the best of its ability, you can have all five different tiers of this pyramid, up to data gathering and experiential. And there's a lot of things that are experiential about social media that I think are really powerful. Posting rules, hints, there are really none. As far as social media goes, I think there's probably some professional rules that you should live by. Frequency and content, there's really two types of posts, informational or interactional, where I just want to informational, where I just want to post something out there for the world to see. Those are things like pictures, and yeah, sure, your kids or your mom or your dad or your spouse or somebody might interact with those. Those aren't really interactional. That's just me putting a picture out there for you to see. Interactional is what we're going to spend a lot of time talking about today, and that's where I post something and I want some interaction out of it. Timing, those are a lot of questions that you want to ask yourself if you're an educator. If are you posting things that are relevant?
there's some relevancy questions you want to ask yourself, but let's get into actually what specifically how you can use Twitter. So Twitter, if you're not familiar, Twitter is a social media posting site where you can post something 140 characters at a time, which is not a whole lot. And I think a lot of people may turn up their nose at Twitter and think, well, why do I want to see what you're eating for dinner? Or why do I want you to post about, you know, well, I'm going to the bathroom right now. I'm off the computer. No one, that's really, I don't think that's where Twitter has its power. Where I think Twitter has its power is the amount of interaction you can get with people who you would never talk to on a regular basis. I heard it described really well one day that Facebook is for people that you know and Twitter is for people that you want to know or that you wish you knew. And I think that's a really good way to say it. Basically what you can do is you can connect with people all over the world. You can post what they say or you can echo what they say with a retweet. You can take part in live Twitter chats. You can just connect with people in all sorts of ways, which we're going to talk about. One of the most important things you can do is to build a professional learning community, and that did not come out right. It's not an earning community. It is a learning community. On the real PowerPoint, it will show up. Right. But basically what a learning community is it's an ability to connect with people all over the world. It's a powerful publishing platform, but it works best when you spend most of your time listening and amplifying the work of others, not just trying to get people to listen to what you say. You know, I always tell my students, as a white male, I have a very limited view on things. So if I'm talking to students about social justice, I only have one specific, very limited tunnel view of what social justice is. Excuse me. I know what social justice is from a textbook answer, but let's face it, I haven't really ever been discriminated against on a large scale. But there are people out there on Twitter that have been, and that's how I can connect students to that, is I can say, I haven't necessarily been discriminated against, but here's 500 people that have tweeted about it, and here's all of their archived content. I can go in there and they can look at that. If I find an article that I want students to read, or if I want my followers to read, that somebody else has written, I can retweet that in about 5 seconds and send that out and say, hey, I think this is worth sharing. And so you can build a professional learning community that way, connect with authors of textbooks, connect with your favorite news outlets, your favorite celebrities if you want to. And I even put in there social work celebrities because I do think we have some social work celebrities. You know what social work area you're interested in. There are people out there that know a lot and are very well versed in that area. I can almost guarantee that they're on Twitter. Find them on Twitter. See what they're saying and echo what they're saying, whether you agree with it or not agree with it. That's a way to really bring about conversation. You can amplify what others say. You can establish connections all over the world, and you can curate content through links. You think of what a museum curator is you can do the same thing based on what other people are saying. What are some of the ways that social workers can use this as far as ethical or look for groups that are not getting heard a whole lot in your area? I'm from West Texas. It's a very conservative area. Not that that's good, not that that's bad, but it's a very limited view of things. And so I have a lot of students that are following me on Twitter. I have a lot of professionals that are following me on Twitter. Let's say I follow somebody. Sorry, I'm hacking up a lung over here. Let me get a drink real fast. Excuse me. Let's say I'm following somebody that's working at Touch of Life in Ghana and childhood slavery. Not a lot of people in Abilene know about that, but that person may be tweeting. I can retweet what that person is saying, and all of my followers can see that. And so, therefore, I'm already making that voice heard. I'm helping people that don't have a strong voice in Abilene, Texas, have that strong voice through me. I'm amplifying what they're saying. This is a powerful way to activate for things, to advocate for things. You can, I'm teaching my students in micro practice next semester. Some of the things that are going on in the news right now, you look at Ferguson, you look at, on college campuses, the domestic or the sexual abuse, things that are going on like that, students can make a strong voice for those communities and for those people by posting things on social media and Twitter and things like that. And I think that's is to say, here we are as social workers, here's what we care about, and here's how we can broadcast that to a larger group of people. I'm going to put a link real fast over here in the chat section. This is a very basic 10-minute tutorial on Twitter, very Twitter 101 if you're not familiar with it. You can, and it is free, and I know I said you're the product, but this is something I'm happy to be the product of. If you want to sign up for Twitter, it'll take you about 2 or 3 minutes. All you have to have is an email account. You can do it 100% from your phone. But these are some really basic ways that you can help other people's voice be heard, or you can have your voice be heard. Skip through this. Twitter tools, real fast. Depending on what the purpose of using Twitter is, Twitter Web is a website. Hootsuite, TweetDeck. These are all things. If you have multiple Twitter accounts, or if you want to follow multiple people, you can use these tools to kind of curate your data in a little more concrete way. The Twitter app is something that I use all the time. Tweetbot or 40404 for text messaging. If you don't want a Twitter account, you just want to follow someone on a text message, Google 40404 and see how you can follow them without a Twitter account. I require all of my students to follow a class Twitter feed, whether they have Twitter or not. And that way, if there's something I want them to know or if there's something I want them to read before class, I can tweet that, and it'll automatically be text messaged to them, even though they're not on Twitter. And so if I say, here's something that happened in the news last night, we had some great talks about Ferguson, Missouri last week in class. The grand jury is going to make a ruling soon. There's going to be a lot of news stories that I want them to read, and so I'll tweet those out maybe once or twice a day before class so they can read that outside of class, and they can have some meaningful conversations about that in class. Live interactions. This is what I want to talk about for just a second. Think reality TV. Now, you don't have to like reality TV, but this is something reality TV really is getting right as far as live tweeting goes. But what live tweeting basically is it's a way for people to experience something together at the same time and interact about that. If you want to look at the show Survivor, it's on every week, and millions of people get on and watch this and live tweet, and while they're watching the show, they'll pull up some of those tweets on the screen, and so you can see what other people are thinking about this. This has a lot of really strong implications for professional social work, I think. Tweet chats. I'm on this website right now monitoring anything that people are saying. Twitter chat is, or tweetchat.com, and you go in and you type in a hashtag. So the hashtag that we're using today is NACSWTech. I would just go in there and type that into the hashtag, and it'll pull up only what is hashtag about this webinar. And so you can really have a concrete example of what people are saying about this, and that's what I'll use during live tweet chats that I have. I started, and I'm going to put a plug in for this, and I hope people will join this. I started a Twitter handle for all students, faculty, professionals, anyone in social work who's interested or willing to help students that are just starting out in the social work field, and I call it Intro, the number 2, SW. So if you want to go there, I'll put the link to the Twitter account in the chat box over here. But here's that. If you go there, we have about 400 people on there right now. About 50 to 60 of them are students, and the rest of them are faculty and professionals. Every Sunday night, we get on there, and for an hour, we just talk about social work issues. And students are on there asking questions. Professionals are entertaining those questions. I have students that have lined up interviews, job interviews off of this. We have a student that wants to know about working internationally. Well, I've never worked internationally, but we have 3 or 4 people on this Intro to Social Work Twitter account that have worked internationally, so she just got on there and tweeted that out. And because of that, she's lined up 2 interviews with international social workers within an hour of doing that. And so I think the power of Twitter is more than just tweeting about what you're having for dinner. There's a lot of really powerful things to it. Here's an example of some Twitter chat language that we'll. An example of a live Twitter chat I had a couple of years ago in class. We talked about gun control a lot. It was around some of these unfortunate school shootings, and so you have a lot of this gun control debate going on. Well, there's a movie about gun control that a lot of these students haven't seen. Bowling for Columbine, love Michael Moore, hate Michael Moore, whatever. He has a very provocative movie about it. Well, hardly any of my students in that class had seen Bowling for Columbine. Well, we talked about it in class, but I didn't want to take the 2 hours to watch it. Well, a week after class, this movie comes on, and I'm sitting in my house. It's about 7 o'clock at night. I see Bowling for Columbine, and so I tweet out this tweet to my students. Bowling for Columbine is on channel 232 right now. Join live tweeting, and I'll give you 5 extra points on next week's paper. And then I use the hashtag intro social work 13. And so about 15 people joined for the next 2 hours on this Twitter chat, and we're just having a talk about this movie. While none of us are even in the same room or anything, we're all just sitting on our mobile phones. We're having a live talk as if we were watching this movie together. And just some of the things that the students said that are awesome. Here's a couple of up through their freaking minds, and they hashtag intro to social work. Or this movie is doing so much, I'm thinking it may make the overall message, whatever it ended up being, less effective. I'm confused, talking about Canada. These are all things that students are talking about outside of class. And this doesn't have to be just educational. You can have a whole professional network dedicated to this. We can have a whole professional network of Christian social workers that when the grand jury ruling comes out, why don't we get together and we have a Twitter chat about it next week, and we can talk about how Christian social workers can represent the body of Christ on this. And we can have, I mean, we don't have to wait until a conference. We can do it any time that we want to and create a unified front just by using something like Twitter. And that's where I think the power of Twitter is. This is also something I tell students and people. Before you post something, think about it. And the acronym is T-H-I-N-K. Is it true, helpful, inspiring, necessary, and kind? Podcasting is also something that I think is really great for social workers. These are all social work, or no, these are all podcast platforms. Spreaker, iTunes, U. Google Voice is not necessarily one, but it's one that I've used in education. If you're interested in that, I won't go into it. Email me, and I'll be happy to walk you through that. SoundCloud, voice memos on your iPhone, these are all things that you can use to podcast. But one of the podcasts that I will recommend is just, it's called the Social Work Podcast. It's really, really a good podcast. It's not just educational. That's about all issues social work related. And if you go into iTunes and type in Social Work Podcast, those are great things that you can download and listen to while you run, listen to while you drive, listen to just whenever. You can just download those to your phone and listen to those interviews. And that's how you can kind of stay current with some of the issues going on in social work. Video chat is also something that I think is very useful. Skype is great. I have my students Skype interview someone in another state in social work. Google Hangouts, if you're part of Google Plus, and if you have a Google email address, a Gmail email address, you're part of Google Plus. You might not know it, but you are. Or FaceTime. Any of these things I think are incredibly important to use in incredibly powerful in social work. Something like, let's say we have Rick over here, we have Amy over here, we have Adam and Nicole, and then here's me and Abilene. I can come together and we can have a panel discussion. We can have a professional development session. I've done CEU sessions like this. These are all really simple things that you can do, with Google Plus or Google Hangout or Skype or things like that. And if you're not very familiar with those, just Google a tutorial. Click right there. The Google Hangout example, you can look at that and see what a Google Hangout looks like. But that provides the ability to have you and up to six other colleagues in a session talking in real time. You can share screens, you can share documents, et cetera. Something I did for my class, kind of married Google Hangouts and Twitter at once, is or Skype and Twitter, is I tweeted out a couple of authors from books that these students had read as part of class, and they both agreed to take part in the discussion with my class. And so here's two authors that just came in and did a 30-minute interview with my class over Skype. These are things that you can just set up online that are free, that people are much more likely to do than they would have, 10 years ago. If I would have asked, the bottom picture right there is Joel Fuhrman. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He hosts a TV show. He has four or five bestselling books out there. There's no way I could have gotten him to come talk to my class. But I emailed him. I said, hey, I have some students that read your book as part of their class. They want to talk to you about, they have some questions for you. He wrote back in 30 minutes and he said, hey, I can be on tonight at 6 if they can join me. So we all got into the classroom and he joined for 30 minutes and he answered questions about the book. You're going to go beyond text messaging. Dave, do you want to talk about any of this at all, or do you want to skip to the last part? It's completely up to you.
I think this is probably worth mentioning, and 2:11, are we done at
2:15? Yes, so there's about 5 minutes left of your session.
Okay, let me just take a minute then to mention this. Quality really matters when it comes to technology, and I think there's a lot of things in life where if you're new to something, you start with the cheap stuff and see if you like it, and then you move your way up. And I think when it comes to technology, that can be a little bit sketchy, a little bit of a dangerous option when you are trying something for the first time. You're not sure if you're going to want to adopt a certain type of technology, and then you do try it and it turns out not to work well. What I have observed, and this is not a Mac versus a PC thing, the Mac products tend to have good microphones and cameras built in. I think Stephen and I are both coming to you today with MacBooks. Is that right, Stephen?
Yep.
So you're seeing the video quality of a standard kind of a MacBook here, at least on mine. I've got my office kind of dark. But then the microphone tends to be pretty good on the MacBook also. Online with their laptops, that the quality is widely varying. And so if you've got a PC that has a webcam and a microphone, that's great. But the quality of those tends to vary greatly. And so if you're going to use that technology and you're going to try to create some of the products like we were talking about earlier, you want to make sure you've got good stuff, or at least good enough, you know. And what I would say is you don't need HD. You don't need $1,000 microphones, but a good $50, $75 microphone might really improve the overall product that you develop. And you may need to get a different webcam if your laptop cam by itself is not good enough. There's many of them that don't have good refresh rates, or the quality is really grainy, the color is weird. And so I would say definitely look into the quality, and just keep in mind you don't have to get the best stuff, but you do want to get some good things to help with your technology. And again, not to make it sound like Macs are so much better than PCs, I just think the Mac products tend to be very consistent, and it can be very wide. And I think if you've got a really good deal on a Toshiba for $400, that's great. But if you're wondering where do they cut corners, a lot of times it's going to be the webcam and the microphone. And so those are some areas where you might think about supplementing for your computer. I think $150 total, and you could get a decent webcam and microphone, and sometimes built into one, that will make a much better product. That's all I have on that.
Sure. Sarah asked if we can do 15 just until we can kind of wrap up and take some questions. I'm happy to. Let me go over a couple things real fast, and then we can go back over some other stuff that we want to. Issues of privacy and security. This isn't going to take more than 2 minutes because these are not set in social work yet. As far as social media and technology goes, the last real statements that were made by NASW were back in 2005, and that is a long time ago. I know there's some people doing some work to help establish some best practice guidelines, but they're just not here yet. The things we need to think about, student and client privacy. There is a huge debate going on right now over the ethics of looking up a client on Facebook or looking up their social media profile. Even though it is public information, what happens if we see something on there that's in violations of their service terms, or is there something that, can we call them on that? What can we do with information that we obtain in ways that is not directly disclosed from the client? Those are questions that we need to ask ourselves and be very careful about that. When in doubt, don't do it. That's what I would say. I think it's real tempting to a lot of times, but you can't unsee something from a client. And if that's gonna break your rapport or something like that, I think there are some ethical implications there. Other questions we need to ask, FERPA or HIPAA, if you're in education or if you're in healthcare or anything like that, what information you need to see, what we talked about, and then what we can do with information that we find online. The one thing that I do want to talk about that we do have some government or some legislation on, and some things that have come down starting to from the Supreme Court, duty to protect and to warn or other legal obligations, anything that we see online or on social media that would bring up safety issues, or if we heard it in person, that we would consider our duty to protect or warn. That duty to protect and warn is the absolute same if we see it online versus in person. If we see that as a professional, we are ethically obligated to report that based on our state laws. So I just wanted to make sure I said that. Physical safety issues, are there any? What are we liable for? You have to be cautious about having students take part in, text message conversations or things like that, because worst case, they're in a wreck while they're driving, and are you liable for that? Technically, no, but those are issues that we also need to think about. So that's all we have for the PowerPoint. I'm happy to go back through some of these if we have somebody that wants to talk about something more specifically now that we're kind of officially out of time. But if someone wants to go back over something, let me know. Some of the slides that I passed over are just specific examples of things I went over in class. While you're thinking of what you want to know more of, I'll be happy to go over my text messaging thing. This is for the educators out there. I try to think of ways that I can bring education outside of the classroom. I talked about that a little bit with my Bowling for Columbine live tweeting. But text messaging, even something as basic as text messaging and phones, gives you the ability to connect with people outside of the classroom or outside of your office. For example, you know, when I talk about poverty and intro to social work, one of the things that I talk about a lot is conservative, largely affluent, white, mainly university. A lot of these kids have never even seen poverty, much less lived it, and they don't know what it's like to take public transportation. So I will divide the class into groups, and some of the class will stay back, and I'll send some of the other class on the bus. We have a bus stop right outside. And so they'll go and ride that bus for 20 minutes, and I'll give them some money. And while they're on the bus, people will text message questions to them to get their reactions. And here's some of the reactions that we have from people riding the bus. We're waiting outside, smells like nature, there's a smart aleck response. How many people are in there? 6 people riding the bus. But then this next slide I think is really telling. This is summer, it's hot, waiting. I couldn't imagine being dressed for work or having to wait or having my children wait with me. You know, people talking about the community that they saw on the bus. We saw people trade bag of chips for cigarettes, things like that. These are things that students that I don't necessarily know enough of. You know, I don't even think about it being hot and waiting for the bus with my kids because, honestly, I've never had to do that, and shame on me for not knowing that. But now that students are able to do that, they can communicate that back with the class during class and get real-time examples of some things. Amelia asked about the file sharing website, Dropbox.com. Yes, it is Dropbox.com. Oh, what is that? I just call it text messaging. What does SMS stand for? Hang on, I'm going to Google it. Short message service. Nobody ever calls it, but that's what it originally was called when it came out. But it's just text messaging. Dropbox.com is an app, and it's also a website. So I know a lot of universities actually utilize Dropbox in their infrastructure for turning in assignments and different things like that. But Dropbox is invaluable. I think it's free for the first part. If you only plan to share a little bit, of course mine's always full because I share a ton. But if you're only planning to share a little bit, it's free. You just go in and you sign up, and you can put it on your computer. You can put it on your mobile device and just share documents seamlessly between those. Audience feedback, poll everywhere. You do not have to have an account to use this. It says right there on the left of the screen, create your first poll. Takes 30 seconds. Yeah, I mean, that's literally all it takes. It says you can get on there. Excuse me, you can click it, and then immediately you can get a poll. Basically what it is, it's a text message-based system. So if you look at the example right there, what's your favorite animal? When you type in your poll, and I use this in class frequently, it'll give the students several, or the participants several options. It's not location-based. You can do it, you know, we can do it right now if we wanted to. If I could share my screen, I would show it to you. But if you wanted to, you know, type that in there, you could have 2 or 3 answers or 2 or 3 options, and then students or participants will text in their answer, and it's immediate feedback they have. For example, last week we had our College of Business Administration has a huge business competition every year where people come in, and it's called Elevator Pitch, and you have 2 minutes to give a pitch for a new business, and the winner gets $1,500. And then they have another award for Crowd's Choice. So there's about 400 people in the audience, and luckily we took 3 social work students over there, and they gave their social work idea. And then at the end, in order to get audience choice, they used to poll everywhere. And they pulled it up on the screen, and in 3 minutes, you knew the winner because everyone voted on the winner, and it's instant, and it's real time, and you see it. It's super easy to use, very, very user-friendly. You can just go in there and mess around with it. You do not have to have an account. You can have up to 40 votes for free if you don't have an account, or if you don't have, you know, to poll 100, 200 people, you have to pay a little bit more time. But other than that, thanks, Dave. Other than that, it's easy and free to use, and I use it in class all the time. So, yeah, you should definitely play with it. It's a lot of fun. What I like about it is it's completely anonymous. I ask my intro to social work students every year. At the first, I have them do a bunch of questions, and I like, you know, I ask questions about poor people deserve to be poor. Well, most people aren't in a social work class aren't going to say yes, they do deserve to be poor, but a few will if it's honest. And so you can kind of get a sense of where your students are on certain issues. It's really good kind of to pick your students' brain or to get people's opinions on things without them having to stand up and vote or raise their hand or something like that. So is there anything else that someone wants to spend a little bit more time on?
Again, if you want to say your question over the phone, just hit *5 on your keypad, and you can voice your question in, or you can add in the chat section, lower left-hand side of your computer screen.
As with most every technology session, as with every technology session I plan, you end up running out of time and going long because it's just easy. I mean, there's just so much to talk about. So, and it's funny. I've been doing technology sessions for about 4 years. And we are light years ahead now than even we were 4 years ago. So I can't even imagine where we're going to be in 4 years. But, you know, I'm not comfortable with all these platforms. There's a few that I pick that I like that we talked a little bit about, you know, choosing something that best met your outcomes. You know, your individualized plan, your style, that's what I like, being able to find something that I really appreciate and that I really like to work with. And right now that's Twitter for me, and that's what I really find useful professionally and personally and things like that. So
thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.